From Radio Sausalito in beautiful Sausalito, California, I'm Mitchell Field, and you are on the field trip. Welcome to The Field Trip, a few minutes of conversation each week with some of the most interesting people in the Bay Area and Marin County. I talk to artists and writers and actors, directors, musicians, some of the characters who make the Bay Area a fun and a fabulous place to live. So let's get right to it. My guest on today's field trip is W. Alan Taylor. Alan Taylor received his MFA from the American Conservatory Theater, and served on the theater faculties of Laney College and the East Bay Center for the Performing Arts before he joined the College of Marin in 2000. He currently teaches acting and directing there, and also directs plays as a member of the College of Marin Drama Department faculty. As an actor, he's been seen in many regional theaters in the U.S., as well as a stint on Broadway in August Wilson's play Seven Guitars, as well as on network TV and in feature films. As a jazz vocalist, Taylor was the winner of the San Francisco Bay Area's first Jazz Search West competition in 2010. He's a jazz vocalist from the old school, with vocal influences that include Joe Williams, Nat King Cole, and John Hendricks, certainly some of my favorites. He's currently a featured vocalist with the Yancey Taylor Jazz Tet. His solo play, In Search of My Father, Walkin' Talkin' Bill Hawkins, which he wrote and performs, made its professional debut at the Marsh Theater in Berkeley, California in 2006, and promptly won the Best Solo Performance Award from the San Francisco Bay Area Theater Critics Circle. Taylor plays a variety of roles in The 90-Minute Show, which is a sweet and poignant play about his true life search for the father that he never knew, who, it turns out, was one of the first African-American disc jockeys in the United States. Let's find out more about this interesting Renaissance man. Please welcome to the field trip W. Alan Taylor. Alan, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me, Mitch. What a pleasure to be on your show, and I love that intro music you had.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, wonderful, wonderful.
So, Alan, let's start at the beginning. Where were you born and raised?
Well, I was actually born in Brooklyn, New York. That's part of my personal story that comes out somewhat in the play. I mentioned specifically that my mother actually moved from Cleveland, Ohio, to New York to have me because of the circumstances that I was born in. I was born out of wedlock, and because it was potentially scandalous in the early 50s, 1953, she decided to go to Brooklyn to be with my godmother. And so I was born there and lived there for about a year with her, which I don't remember, but then she brought me back to Cleveland. So I was raised in Cleveland, Ohio, and was there until I was 18, until I moved away to go to college.
So what were the circumstances of your upbringing? I'm assuming that as a single mother, she didn't have a lot of funds and might not have been the easiest life?
Well, first of all, my father, who, as you mentioned in the intro, was the first black disc jockey in Cleveland and was married and did not have kids with his wife, they made a pact. My mother made a pact that they were going to keep it a secret from me, his identity. So all of my childhood, I was constantly asking my mother who he was and never told the truth until I was a grown man. I was 22 years old, and she finally told me. And there's a part of the story that is always an important, the inciting incident, if you will, of my life. And that is, when I was 18 years old, my mother and father made an agreement that they were going to have me meet him under the guise of a job interview. And he was at the time working for the Cleveland Urban League, and she sent me downtown Cleveland to sit with him, again, thinking that I was going to a job interview. This was right before I was going off to college. I had been accepted by Ohio State University. And so he sat with me for almost an hour and never told me that he was my father. He did ask me a lot of personal questions. He wasn't talking too much about the job. So that was something that stayed with me, even though, you know, I didn't get the job. I thought it was a very strange experience. It was really my first real job interview. After I graduated was when my mother told me finally who he was. He passed away 3 months before. And she, in the same conversation, told me that he was the man that I met when I was 18 years old. And of course, well, not of course, but I was livid. I didn't get information. So you know, a childhood that was filled with putting pieces together, trying to piece my manhood together, trying to piece what it meant to be a boy, and all the masculinity aspects of my life that were missing on the surface. And I just had to just navigate my way through friends and surrogate fathers. I had a lot of men that that I observed very closely, trying to figure out, you know, what it was going to be, what was my plan, what was my my way of being, my way of doing in life, how was I going to survive. My grandmother and my step-grandfather helped to raise me, and they came north. You mentioned that my mother's financial state, she wasn't doing very well financially. She was self-employed. She was a seamstress, very talented seamstress. But they came up north to help her buy a house so that I could be raised properly. We were one of the first black families on my block, which very quickly turned into an all-black neighborhood in the mid-50s.
Well, how did you develop an interest in music and singing and theater?
Well, music was just kind of a natural for me. We had a piano in my house. My mom, she sang a little bit and played a little bit, but, you know, my dad, who was very musically inclined, of course, being a disc jockey, and he was a budding singer in his own right. I didn't know this at the time, of course, but I think genetically I was absolutely tuned into music from him as well. I was a big record collector as a kid, had a band in high school, and really had made up my mind that I wanted to be a musician professionally, but my mother and grandparents convinced me that, and I was the first one in my family to go to college. I felt fairly obligated, but I really, really appreciated what they had always done for me. So I went to college and found my way to majoring in communications. And it was only after I found out who my father was and then developed so much anger around that whole situation that I slowly began to lose interest in radio. And after that, found theater. I moved to New York with that radio career in mind and lived with my godmother, the woman that my mother lived with when I was born. They got back in touch with each other right before I graduated, and I found a theater and started acting. And it wasn't long before I started considering a professional career. And and then the next step, of course, for me was researching how these people that I knew and around the New York acting area were getting jobs, not only in New York but around the country. And I found that a lot of them were doing it because they had advanced degrees in acting. And so I decided that I was going to get an advanced degree. I was going to go to Juilliard or Yale. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I just made up my mind that I would. And so I auditioned for a number of programs and was accepted by the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco, which was a real delight to me because the music scene here had always been a big attraction. So it was kind of a joy to move to the Bay Area.
Well, how did you come to write and develop the play In Search of My Father?
Well, when I was 44 years old, about 15 years ago, actually, I'm about to turn 61, I can't believe it. Those years go by, I don't think. The real deal was that I was reading a book by Julia Cameron, really well known among artists. It's called The Artist's Way. And in that book, she talks about a daily exercise of morning pages. It's a writing exercise. You know, you don't think about what you're going to write. You just let the pen move across the page. And my dad just kept coming up in my writing from my subconscious, and I realized that I was the age that my dad was when I was born. And so I really began to start to think and write more about what it was like for him to be a 44-year-old man, having this baby out of wedlock, married, and you know, having that static in his life with his wife and, you know, dealing with my mom. And I just began to empathize with him in a different way. And so then I was having a conversation with this director friend of mine, and she said, you know, you should write this down and do a show. And it felt right, because at that time, I'd been in the business now for almost 20 years, and I said, but this is my life's work, obviously. Why not use my life's work to get closer to my dad? So that's how it really started.
Sure. I noticed on one of the websites where I read about you that you use an Emerson quote as a sort of a philosophy. And let me quote it. Do not go anywhere the path may lead. Go instead to where there is no path and leave a trail. Tell me a little bit about that philosophy. Does it mean a lot in your life?
You know, it really does mean a lot in my life. And I only discovered that quote about a year ago. But it just felt so right. And, of course, Emerson has quite a reputation for his spiritual and philosophical side of his writing. Right now, I kind of find myself ready to take some chances and go along with it in the Emerson quote, not waiting to have a path will go down a path that's already forged, but not being afraid at age 60, which takes more courage than ever, as far as I'm concerned, to forge a new path and just live by faith that I'm going to indeed make it.
Well, I had the very great pleasure of seeing your show In Search of My Father, Walk and Talk in Bill Hawkins the other night. It's actually charming. I really enjoyed it. And I want to let my listeners know that they can see this show because Alan is reprising it as a fundraiser on Saturday, February 15th at the East Bay Church of Religious Science. For an overview of Alan's show, you can go to walkintalkin.com. To listen to some of Alan Taylor's vocals from his jazz CD entitled Looking Forward, you can go to reverbnation.com/W. Alan Taylor. And in March, Alan will be doing a jazz show. Now, if you missed any of this information, don't worry. You can find it on the Field Trip page on Radio Sausalito. I shall paste all of that information right there for you. And I think, Alan, we should say as a postscript that although it was very sad that you didn't know your dad before he passed away, you have created him in this show that you do. And as a postscript, he was posthumously inducted into the Radio Television Broadcasters Hall of Fame in Ohio in 2007, right?
Yes, and that has been a real highlight of this entire journey for me. When I took the show to Cleveland in 2007, some folks that from the radio world there saw the show and really felt strongly that my father, who had been pretty much forgotten in Cleveland, should be recognized by the Radio and Television Hall of Fame of Ohio. And so they got together and started to actually advocate for that. And so a committee was coming together to come up with the inductee list of nominations, and he was nominated and then actually inducted. And so I went back and at the end of 2007 for the ceremony and accepted on his behalf, and it was a real pleasure for me. And I'd say it brought me even closer to him to have that acknowledgement. And I felt very, very good about being able to give something back to him at the part of the process. Can I just say one thing? I wanted to also just make a couple of just quick clarifications to the information about the stuff coming up.
Yeah.
The website for the show on the 15th, February 15th, is EBCRS .org. EBCRS.org. And if you go there, there's a link to get tickets there. And the shows in March unfortunately are not going to be on my website, but I can tell you there's one show that's going to be in Marin, actually, at the Seahorse in Sausalito on March 25th. I'll have the great pleasure of singing. It's a Tuesday evening, March 25th, with Noel Jukes, who's a fine saxophonist.
Well, he's the guy who's playing my intro tune.
Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Oh, boy. Oh, Noel is just a fabulous musician. I'm so fortunate to be able to play with him. So that's on March 25th at the Seahorse.
Well, I'll try and get down there and see the show myself.
Oh, I hope you can. Yes.
Well, Alan Taylor, continued success to you, sir, and thanks for taking us on a field trip today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much, Mitch.
That's Alan Taylor, everyone. Well, thanks for joining me today on The Field Trip. I welcome your views and comments on the show, as well as your suggestions for future guests. My email address is mitchellfield@radiosausalito.org. The theme music you hear behind me is the tune Superjet, with the fabulous Marin sax man Noel Jukes up front. It's from the recording The Noel Jukes Quartet featuring Matt Clark. Please remember that The Field Trip can be heard Wednesdays at the top of every hour at 1610 on your AM radio dial in Southern Marin, countywide on Wednesdays at noon on cable channel 26, on your computer at radiosausalito.org, or 24 hours a day as a free podcast from the iTunes Store. If you liked today's show, please tell your friends, and if you didn't, well, please tell your enemies. So till next time, this is Mitchell Field saying goodbye, good luck, and see you next week.